Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the premier radio networks, including, I don't know how many now, 130 or so of the best stations in the U.S., Canada, and XM Channel 158, and lots of other places, too. On Saturday, January 22nd, 2011, this is episode 737. Enjoy.
Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, all that stuff. The list gets longer all the time. Everything's got a chip in it these days. Digital photography, surround sound. I saw an amazing demonstration. This is a perfect example of how chips are changing everything. When I was at CES a couple of weeks ago, and I hope you heard our CES shows. If you didn't, they're available in podcast form. On my TWiT podcast network at twit.tv. It's in the specials feed, actually, but there's also the radio shows are there as well. Actually, they're on Tech Guy Labs, too, our radio show site. It's all available. But anyway, then, it was the last thing, actually, I saw before I left Las Vegas on Sunday afternoon. Scott Wilkinson and I, we said, one last chance to kind of find something cool and new and different at CES. We'd seen all the 3D TVs. He'd gone over to see the high-end audio at the Venetian. You know, I'm less interested in high-end audio. I'm less interested, I guess, from a theoretical point of view, but I'm not going to spend $20,000 on a pair of speakers. And I don't know very many people who will. That's a hardcore enthusiast, not a normal you and me. But he said... You know, I heard there was something in surround sound that was kind of interesting, and I'd like to go see it. And I said, oh, you mean the Hire? And he said, yes. And I said, well, let's go. There's a Swiss company called, I think it's Sonic Emotion. And they make a chip. They don't make speakers. They make a chip which they sell to speaker manufacturers that take a stereo two-speaker system or maybe a six-speaker. You know, now they have these sound bars sometimes you can put in front of your TV. And they use digital, very sophisticated digital technology to take those basically stereo systems, they're in front of you left and right, and fill the room with surround sound, be able to play stuff behind you, above you, below you, you know, 30 degrees off-center and 15 degrees above the horizon, anywhere in this sphere that surrounds you. They call it the sound stage. And I'm always skeptical. We've seen a lot of sound bars in the past, and they're really a way for people who don't have the space or the money to do a, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 speaker system to kind of simulate it, I guess. So I was a little skeptical, but I'd heard such good things from my friend Robert Herron, who is a home theater expert. Scott himself had heard really interesting reports about this. So we went over to the Sonic Emotion booth, and they had $100 Kobe speak. Now, Kobe, C-O-B-Y, if you know the name, is a really kind of a low-end audio-video company. They make very inexpensive cameras and stuff. You know, this kind of stuff you see at Target or Walgreens. You know, inexpensive stuff. They had a $100 soundbar. And then Hire, which is not next tier up. They're not the high-end audio, but they had a $350 soundbar. Small thing. Wasn't much bigger than a clock radio. Sits in front of your TV. And in the booth, it was great. It was actually a great demo. They had a booth with a button, big red button. And if you walk up to the button and you press it, it goes to the stereo mode. It just turns off the Sonic Emotion chip, and the speakers are doing what they would do without any help from digital signal processing or any of the sophisticated electronics. And it sounds kind of, frankly, like tinny speakers right in front of me. You let go of the button, and whoom, the room fills. There's sound coming from all around you. It was mind-boggling. That was $350. So I went around the corner. Okay, well, how does this do with the Kobe? That's $100. Same thing. Unbelievable. It went from tinny stereo to surround sound. Now, I imagine, Scott was impressed, and he knows his home theater. I imagine somebody who's like a home theater aficionado would say, oh, Leo, Oh, please, Leah, don't call that surround sound. That's not surround. But I was very impressed. Kobe's selling theirs right now. Haier's going to sell theirs in a few months. And this Swiss company, Sonic Emotion, is going to be selling their chip to other companies. And if, you know, as you get higher end and you put them in, say, let's say a Polk audio soundbar with really nice speakers, this is a really great thing. It is just gives you, I was very impressed. But the reason I bring it up is this is an example of how chips change everything. The chips they're selling are digital signal processors. They work with analog signals, but it's still a computer brain taking information and in real time, it has to do it very quickly, obviously, making such major transformations that it changes everything. Chips change everything. And it just blew me away. So that's really what this show is about, is how things change when you move to the digital domain. What you can do with them. Just think about your vinyl records. Some of you will remember those. You know, if you wanted to duplicate it, you would dub it to a tape. And every time you made a copy of that tape, it would sound worse and worse and worse and worse. In fact, every time you played the vinyl record, it would sound worse and worse and worse and worse. As soon as we were able to take this audio, this analog audio, these little wiggly waveforms, and turn them into ones and zeros, that stopped, right? Now, maybe there was a little bit of degradation in the digitizing process, the getting from the little wiggly waves to ones and zeros. And that's true. There's a little bit, mostly inaudible. In fact, in my opinion, at least for people like us, unless you have golden ears, completely inaudible. Only theoretically do you know that there's stuff missing. I mean, it's pretty good. But once you make it ones and zeros now, what can you do? Well, you can transmit it at the speed of light. Couldn't do that with vinyl. You can make infinite perfect copies. Couldn't do that with vinyl, much to the chagrin of the record companies. You can modify it. You can edit it easily. You can mash it up with other music easily. That's why all of a sudden in the 80s and 90s, as computers came along, we started to see more and more of these mashups where people would take songs, match beats, do some interesting stuff. Once they're bits, the sky's the limit. So that's what this show is about, really. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO. If you want to ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion, tell me about something cool you saw. Tell me about something neat going on in your life, something, some great idea you've had. When we were also at CES, we talked to the guy who invented VisiCalc, the first spreadsheet program. He created the idea of a spreadsheet program, Bob Frankston. And he says, it's time to take back the internet. He said that the phone companies and the cable companies have no interest in giving us the internet we deserve. Of course they don't. Why would they? Their chief interest is making as much money as they can off the existing infrastructure. But he says there's an interesting problem here for them, especially for the cable companies. They see their business dissolving in front of their eyes. Why do you think Comcast just bought NBC? Because they want to get in the content business. Comcast had divested all their, you know, they had Liberty Media. They had a big content division, which they got rid of in the 90s because they didn't want to be in content. They thought, oh, the money will be in the cable. And 1,000 content providers will compete for access to our customers. Well, the internet changed all that, didn't it? And now it's the people who make the stuff that are in the driver's seat because there's 1,000 ways to deliver it all via the internet. And Comcast realizes it can't make as much money as an internet company selling wholesale bits as it can as a cable company selling premium content. So Bob says this is an opportunity for us to take back the internet. Take back that old copper they don't want anymore. They're getting out of the copper business. Maybe we can do something with it. We don't need to have the, we don't have the same, maybe community internet or even apartment building internet or neighborhood internet. Those are the ideas I love to hear about. 8888-ASK-LEO. Some big changes this week. We'll talk about Steve Jobs stepping down. We'll talk about Eric Schmidt stepping down. I think he was fired at Google. What really happened at Google? We'll talk about that. Big shakeup at Hewlett-Packard and their board of directors. This was an interesting week for these big computer companies. And of course, Keith Olbermann got fired, but... That's another story. Although, you know, it might not be another story. It does seem a little coincidental that this happened right at the time that was it Jeff Zucker, the president of NBC, leaves, Comcast takes over? That's in. No, Comcast says, no, we're not. No, we wouldn't do that. This could all be part and parcel of the same thing. Let's talk about it. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Webpage is techguylabs.com. James DeRuvo is there right now, writing everything I say down, even this. And he will get all the notes up so you don't have to write the things down as you listen to the show. If you're driving, I certainly wouldn't want you to do that. So just keep listening and we'll get everything up there so you can go to techguylabs.com at any time. This is show 737. Yes, they're sequentially numbered. It's just a coincidence. I don't name the shows after airplanes. This is 737 shows. Started counting them in January 2004, so it's 7 years worth of shows, right? Yeah. 737, that's not right. Oh, yeah, 100 shows, 104 shows a year. Yeah, that makes sense. That does make sense. But I've been doing it for longer than that. I started doing... computer talk radio and then computer television in the early 90s. So I think this is my 20th year doing this stuff. Things have changed in 20 years. Holy moly. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. My old friend Jan from Beverly Hills with the dog podcast. Hey, Jan.
Let me get off the.
Yeah, yeah. What's that? You change because we couldn't say her podcast name on the radio.
You changed the name of it.
Thanks to the FCC. you know, it's not even thanks to the FCC. It's thanks to, you know, just general terror incurred by the FCC because the B word for a female dog is a perfectly legitimate word.
Yes, it is. And I am the Hollywood one.
And you then, but that was the name. Now, what do you call it?
It was the Hollywood. Dogsandcats101.com.
I like that.
And my new web series one is afterthehutch.info. It's about the Playboy bunnies now.
Oh, that's interesting. Were you a Playboy bunny, Jan?
For like 10 years.
You were in the clubs?
I opened the New York club. I worked in Miami, Chicago, nights. I worked with Lauren Hutton, Deborah Harry, Gloria Steinem. Yeah.
Wow, that's so cool, Jan.
If you go there, you see it. You know what? I put it out yesterday about it. That wasn't why I was calling. But anyway... I put it out yesterday about it, and my site got knocked down several times. And I always hear you talk about that. What is that about?
Well, first of all, give me this site because I want to go. Is it Inside the Hutch?
Yeah, After the Hutch.
After the Hutch.
Couldn't get .com, .info. After the Hutch.
Like After the Hutch.
Funny Hutch.
Because it's that's so cool.
Yeah, so I'm going to do a web series. And coincidentally, there's an NBC show coming out about the bunnies in the 60s and 70s then. And mine is actually a web series.
It's funny because when Playboy, when I was a young man, was considered very adult.
Yeah,
and nowadays, it's almost tame compared to what's out there now.
But you'll see.
Jan, that's so you were a Playboy bunny for 6 years.
Like 10 years.
10 years. And there's a picture. Is that you on the front?
Yes.
Adorable.
Was I.
How cute were you? That is adorable. Oh, that's so cute.
Funny, in Miami, and I lied. It was 16. I was 16 years old. It was summer vacation, and I went there, and they found out. And I was, you know, went back to school. And then when the New York club opened, I worked there when I was 18. You could only work days. And then after I had my son, I went away, I came back, and I worked nights for years.
Isn't that cute?
Yeah. So,
well, I didn't know that about you, Jan. So that's are you you're doing a webisodes on those, yeah?
Yes, I was trying to do a sitcom about it, but then I thought, you know what? Do a web series. I can do it myself, and they're very
absolutely.
Yeah.
And, yeah, absolutely. And you know, this is a good time because one of the things Hef just announced is that Playboy is going to be on the iPad, and everybody said, "What did Apple change their rules?" And then. It came out that, well, yeah, it is, but it's going to be a web page. So you'll be able to look at all the old Playboys and the new on the web.
magazines. Now, everybody should know, I wasn't a playmate. I had my clothes on.
Yes.
Okay.
There is a difference, isn't there?
Difference. Yes, there is a difference. Not to
and I,
playmates. But,
and know. Now I recognize you. This is there. Here's a picture, and I recognize you in the middle there. That's so cute.
At the top, there's me with a camera, because I'm a director. You'll see. That's me now.
That's oh, this is great. Well, Jan, all this time we've talked, and I had no idea.
Yeah, well, I wasn't wearing my ears.
So, okay, answer your question, which isn't actually the main question, but I'll answer your question about websites going down because it is probably something that concerns people. You cannot design and wouldn't want it. It's like building a highway for the day that, you know, the Super Bowl, the Macy's Day Parade, and the presidential inauguration are all going to be at the end of that highway. Most of the time, it's just a country road. So you don't build the pipe to your internet site, your web page, as if it's always going to have a huge amount of traffic. You buy a certain amount of access, a certain amount of connectivity, and no company would itself spend all that money. So what happens is, if you get a really heavy traffic day, there's a traffic jam. That's all that happens, is that not everyone who wants to see the site can, because it's not designed for what they call high availability. That's what it's called. Now, a site like Amazon or AOL or Google is designed for high availability. It takes a lot more to bring them down, but even they can be brought down by a sudden surge in traffic. And in fact, that's what a denial of service attack is. It's a bunch of people using their machines to merely visit a site at the same time, and by doing so, shut the site down. But if it's a site like Amazon, they of course plan for a lot of traffic. You can also buy, and it's not affordable, so I'm not recommending this for after the hutch, but you can also buy insurance for something like this, which essentially says if your needs for bandwidth suddenly go skyrocketing through the roof, we'll provide a bigger pipe for you instantly. But that in itself is costly. It's just not worth it. You know, it's great. When your site goes down, it means a lot of people wanted to see it. It, of course, is a little scary because you hope that they will come back after not being able to get in. Sometimes you don't get that second chance.
Yeah. And when I actually put up my web series, then that'll be a different thing. We're just developing it now.
Well, and that's why you put it on YouTube, because that never happens to YouTube. YouTube, they know they're going to, you know, it's a Super Bowl every day at YouTube.
It took a couple hours, but it was back up again. I never called anyone.
Sure. No, it goes down because a lot of people are hitting it. You probably got mentioned in an article.
Right. Well, I Twittered about after the hutch.
Okay. So you have enough Twitter followers that they were able to bring it down. That's all. You did a denial of service to yourself.
Right.
Now, there are companies like Squarespace, as an example, who build their infrastructure in such a way that they can handle this. You know, normally you have what's called shared server. Whereas there's a thousand, sometimes 1,000 websites on one computer. Now, if any one of those sites gets busy, all of the sites get slow. Companies like Squarespace do load balancing and do automatic bandwidth enhancements when the demand goes up. So there are internet service providers, or I guess web hosts, who very specifically will say, hey, don't worry about it. We have a way of handling it. But it's not, you know, it requires on their part a bigger investment in infrastructure and some thinking about that. And for the most part, this doesn't happen because most people just don't get that much traffic.
Right. Well, I do have a Squarespace account. I'm still learning it.
It will never go down.
Right.
I mean, I've tried it. You cannot bring it down. Hey, Jan, hang on the line because I know you have a real question. I got all sucked into that bunny discussion. We'll give you a little more time right after the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet. at the lowest price ever, $14.95 a month. Call 866 the number 2 get net to get DSL Extreme. Would I lie to you? 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. That's the number Jan called. Dogs and Cats 101. And in, and after the hutch, I almost said inside the hutch, after the hutch dot info. Hi, Jan.
Hi.
So I answered your non-question. Now, what's your real question?
I'm going to China, to Beijing in October to work with the pandas.
Oh, man. Jan, you got a great life.
Well, sort of. Now,
can you train a panda? I mean, I know you're an expert dog trainer. Can you train a panda?
No, it's a thing where they let you go there and go in and work with the pandas and spend a week in Beijing.
Have you been to China before?
No. Am I going to
My son Henry and I went there last summer. You're going to love it.
That's why I was calling, because I have an iPhone 4, I have an iPad. I mean, what do I bring?
I would certainly bring any. Well, first of all, the hotel you're in will almost, if it's a, you know, a decent hotel, unless you're staying in the Hutong, if you're staying in a hotel, we'll have Wi-Fi. And so I used my iPhone, and I didn't have an iPad at the time, but and my laptop with the Wi-Fi. Great. In fact, I was able to use the Wi-Fi there to Skype home and save myself a lot of money.
Really?
Yeah. Now, the rules change all the time in China, and they may be blocking Skype that day. When I got there, for instance, this was July 2009, I could use Twitter, I could use Facebook. By the time I left 10 days later, I couldn't use either.
And do I have to with my phone so I don't get a lot of expensive phones?
Yes. You want to call AT&T, and you want to buy an international data plan. And by the way, the cost, if you don't, the cost of data roaming, you know, if you use the Chinese phone company's data, is sky high, thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
So it's roughly $1 a megabyte. You call. I'm going to do this too because I'm going to South America in a couple of weeks, and I'll call them and I'll say I want the. Now you got to figure out you're going to be there a week. Right. You got to kind of monitor your usage really closely. 100 megabytes is probably enough. That's about $100.
Right. And what about using like Google Voice? Go to my Gmail. You know how you do that.
Anything you do online.
Uh-huh.
Google Voice, Twitter, Facebook. Checking email, all of that uses international data at a very high price. So your 100 megabytes is your pool, and that's up and down. So if you decide, this is what really ends up costing me. I upload pictures, audio, movies. Man, that ends up costing a lot.
Wow.
So it both directions you're paying for. So now there is a usage app on the iPhone, but don't believe it. I did, and I got dinged heavy. When I got back, I called AT&T, so you could turn that international plan off. How much did I spend? It was double the amount that the iPhone said. So there's an AT&T wireless app which you want to put on there and use that. They say that's accurate. No, I don't know about that. The problem is really that there's a lag between the time you use the data and the time the Chinese telecoms notify AT&T. And so, I don't know. You'd think the phone would know exactly how many bits are going in and out, but apparently it doesn't.
Right. Okay. Well, and I have an 11-inch Air, but I'm afraid to take that. You know?
It's fine to bring it because you'll only be able to use that with Wi-Fi. So in the hotel there's Wi-Fi. So what you want to do is whenever possible use the Wi-Fi. That's much less expensive.
Oh right. Oh, and I can do that also with my iPad.
With the iPad, the iPhone, and the Air, all can use Wi-Fi. It's the 3G data that gets you in trouble, and this is true all over the world. Call your phone company and say, what is the cost of roaming data? And they will tell you. And it's a lot more expensive than using it at home. So you have, in AT&T's case, they do have an international data plan, which is still expensive, much more, $1 a megabyte. It's ridiculous. But it's a lot less than it'll cost. And if you go over, they start charging you at the full rate.
Great. And I hope they speak a lot of English.
They do. The English is something that the Chinese really want to learn because they want to play in the international economic scene.
Nice.
You're going to love it. Eat food like crazy. Be careful where you eat. Eat in fancy restaurants if you can.
Yeah.
You know, John C. Dvorak, my good friend, the computer and wine expert, told me about a Peking duck place. He said, but you don't want to go in the daytime because it's too disgusting. You have to go when it's dark so you can't see. And I asked our guide, I said, well, this is where he says the best Peking duck in Beijing is. And the guide said, yeah, but I wouldn't go there if I were you. He said, I eat there, but I'm used to it now. So we went to, believe it or not, the Hyatt in Beijing and had an amazing Peking duck. It's interesting because you know, I have this notion of China being an agrarian nation, communist. There is an absolute wealthy elite in China, and there are a lot of very expensive. There's a fancy restaurant designed by Philippe Starck. It's amazing. I mean, it's incredible. I don't know, you know, who's going there. The Plutarchs, I guess, or whatever, plutocrats, but somebody's going there, and it's worth it if you can to go to some nice restaurants because you will never have better food. I mean, Chinese invented haute cuisine.
Not
dogging. I mean, I don't know if you like Chinese food, but it's not like we get in America. Let me put it this way. It is very good.
Yeah.
And the culture, and it's fascinating, and the smog is appalling, and it might not be so bad in October, but it was it reminded me of the, you know, they talked about the London fogs of the early 19th century. It's like that. At first you think it's weather, then you realize, wait a minute, this isn't weather. This is the air. It's thick.
Right. Well, I'll let you know how it goes.
Have a great time. I think it is absolutely the most interesting country in the world right now.
Great. All right, thanks.
And you're getting to see the pandas. I'm so jealous. What fun. Thank you, Jan. Jay in Providence, North Carolina. Hi, Jay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, I've got a short but two-part question for you. How do you feel about the practice of websites selling aggregate user data? And if you do feel kind of good about it, what would be a good way to go about doing that if you get a website?
Well, they all do it, first of all. If you look, this is how Facebook makes money. This is how Google makes money. They don't sell individual data. At least we don't know, but we don't think. They claim they don't sell individual data. Actually, I'll tell you a story that'll raise the hair on the back of your neck in a little bit. But in theory, they only sell aggregate data. So they say, you want 25 to 50-year-olds who live in the Northwest? We can sell that. We don't tell you their names, but we can make sure they see the ads. As an individual, it's not so easy to do. Is somebody approaching you about doing that?
No, I'm considering putting together a website. I've got the domain name registered. In fact, I've actually got several registered, but it's one of those things I feel like if I can make money, more money than...
Yeah, the way to do it is not, you know, there's no broker who's going to say, yeah, tell us everything about your users. But if you put Google Ads on there, and that's what people do, they use AdSense. That is the webmaster's version of Google AdWords. You put Google, it's very easy to do. You can do it in 3 seconds if you go to Google and I guess google.com/AdSense, set up an account. You won't make a huge amount of money, but you make some money. Depends on the number of people who visit your site. In effect, you're selling Google aggregate visitor data because those ads embedded on your page report back to Google who's visiting. You don't know a lot about your users. If you collect information more than just the fact that they're visiting, if you collect email addresses and so forth, you've got to be very clear. If you plan to sell that stuff, you've got to be very clear. That is wrong. I know sites do it. It's wrong to share email addresses or any other information that you collect. You'll know one thing about everybody who visits your site. That's their IP address, which roughly pinpoints them. You could set a cookie on their browser that will then identify them uniquely. This is what Google does. This is what most everybody does. What I don't like is sites that aggregate information, you know, from forms and things. My email address, my age, my income. And then sell it to other sites which aggregate further information. Pretty soon, you're a consumer with a target on your back walking around. Not fond of that. 8888 Ask Leo. I am Leo Laporte.
The tech guy.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. That's the number Karen called from Huntington Beach, California. Hi, Karen. Leo Laporte here.
Hi there. I'm so glad to talk with you. I'm one of the non-techie people that loves your show anyway.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, we need to get everybody to listen. I can't just stick with the techies. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Well,
what can I do to help you?
I'm calling about a very non-technical question, and that is I do a lot of reports for my work, and primarily I use the computer for those, and I use QuickBooks, and then I save all my travel pictures. And it's time for me to get a new desktop computer, and I'm real interested in what you'd recommend.
Unfortunately, QuickBooks, and I mean this, requires Internet Explorer, which means... You know, you have to use Windows. You have to, QuickBooks Online, or use QuickBooks on Windows. I should say only QuickBooks Online requires IE. Oh, okay, so you could use. Okay, so that's the software version, but you do still need Windows. The only pretty much PCs are PCs. To be honest with you, I'm a Dell fan, but Dell has as many problems as anybody else. HP tends to load their machines up with junk, which I'm not fond of, but you can get rid of it. Are you going to get a laptop or a desktop? Do you know?
I've got a laptop, but I'm going to get a desktop this time.
Okay. I think Dell has some very good looking all-in-one desktops that are not too expensive. I caution anybody about sometimes you look at these prices and you see the loss leaders, the $400 or $500 computers. And I caution you a little bit about being too cheap.
Uh-huh.
Mostly because they cut corners to get that price down. And sometimes they have a Windows Starter Edition instead of the Full Edition. Sometimes they don't have much memory in them, or the drives are small, or more likely they'll use slower chips. And they're just slower. They're just not, and they're not as well made. So consider, used to be we said the computer you want is always $2,500. That's a lot less now. It's about $1,000.
Okay.
I would say you're going to spend $1,000 though. Don't get a $400 computer. That would be my biggest advice.
Alrighty. And it's as though you were thinking Mac.
Well, I'd like to point people towards Macs if possible for several reasons. One, most importantly, they're less of a security risk. They're not nearly the number. In fact, really, there aren't any attacks against Macs unless they're specifically against individuals. There's no widespread attacks against Macs. I think in many cases, Macs are better built. They are more expensive, and that's one of the reasons they're more expensive. But you can't run QuickBooks on one. It's funny, Walt Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal said, the best Windows machine is a Mac. And it's true that you can run Windows on Macintoshes, but you have to buy Windows, which is a cost.
Yeah.
So I would say it's fine to get it. You've been using Windows. It sounds like you kind of want to get more do more stuff than you used to do. You want to kind of get into computers a little bit.
No, not particularly. It's just that I want to get a good computer for my money, and I need it to last
right.
A while.
I'll tell you, I put my money where my mouth is when I quit my office. And, of course, in the office, they're using QuickBooks. They need Windows. I buy Dells.
Okay.
And I think Dells are very robust, very reliable. The desktops, they make very affordable desktops. Here's a couple of things I'd say. Get 4 gigs of RAM.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes they sell 2. 4 is really what you want. You don't need more, but 4 is good. I would say get the biggest screen you can afford.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much productivity the screen can really enhance your productivity, a big screen.
Yes.
I would say hard drive size for you is, if you're just putting pictures on it, is probably not going to be an issue. You're going to get almost certainly at least 500 gigs, which is a lot.
Okay.
And then I would say probably the processor you're looking at is an i5, an Intel i5.
Okay.
If you really want to save money, you could get an i3 or a Core 2. They're still selling those, but I'm going to future-proof you a little bit and say get an i5.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking about a Mac, and I really like the little ones where you don't have as much machine.
They're beautiful. The MacBook Airs are gorgeous.
They're really beautiful, but I realize it would be more difficult to transfer all my information.
There is QuickBooks for Mac. It's just a different license, and it's not in the same category as QuickBooks for Windows.
Okay.
So if you really, it sounds like QuickBooks is your primary thing.
Well, QuickBooks and Word.
Word's available on the Mac, and it's identical. It was pretty much identical.
Which one on the Mac would you recommend if I?
Well, if you like the, you know, I mean, look, the MacBook Air is the best computer of the year, in my opinion. It's called the Air. That's the little thin one. It's a laptop. It's not a desktop.
Okay.
But it's tiny. But I mean, it's so light. It's what I carry with me everywhere. It's replaced all my other computers. It only has 64 gigs of disk space. So you have to keep stuff in the cloud. You know, that'd be, you know, and running Windows on it, you can, by the way, and it runs Windows beautifully. But you don't have so much storage. So it's like having Windows is going to take up even a bigger chunk of what is already limited. I think, you know, it's very prosaic. It's very beige box. But just get a Dell, you know?
All right.
And if you want sexy, put aside $1,000 and get a MacBook Air. Most people don't. You're not the, you know, I think there's two kinds of users. There's the users of computers who think of them as a tool. And there's the users who are enthusiasts who think of them as a toy. You're clearly a tool user. This is a productivity tool for you.
Oh, and it's a wonderful tool for me, because I remember the days when I was doing clerical work and had to use the carbon paper.
Oh yeah, this is a huge improvement.
And I did my master's thesis on a typewriter.
Right. No, I agree. This is, and I'm the same vintage as you, and this is a huge step forward. And that's why when I look at the Air, I go, wow,
yeah.
It's a supercomputer that weighs 2 pounds.
And that is a desktop, you said?
I mean, no, that's a laptop. Yeah. So, and Mac, Apple sells these, iMacs, which are very nice desktops. That's my preferred desktop, but they're pricey compared to a PC.
Yeah.
You're paying, I would say in general, you pay about 50% more for a Macintosh than you do for a PC.
Okay. Thank you, Leo.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Welcome. Bye.
And have fun. And if you have problems, you know where to go. 8888-ASK-LEO. The Air is for the toy people, the enthusiast side, not the tool people. I mean, it's a great tool. I shouldn't say that. It's a great tool. But it's just, it's for people who look at computers and go, ooh. If you look at a computer and say, that's replacing carbon paper spreadsheets and a typewriter, you're using it as a tool, then it doesn't, you know, the ooh, ah, it's going to only last a few weeks. And then you're going to say, well, how is it working as a tool for me? Same thing with the iPad. You know, iPad has a lot of appeal. I'm not going to call it sex appeal because that's a terrible word to use for computer hardware, but it has appeal. But it is not, it is more for consuming content than for creating content. And I would hate to try to do my books on an iPad. That'd be the last thing I'd recommend. Let's go to Lake Superior, Wisconsin. I'm sorry, Michigan. And Ted. Hey, Ted.
Hey, how you doing, Leo? Listened to a lot of your CES coverage and watched some of it, and it was very good.
Thank you. We had a blast there.
Yeah, it sounded like it. Hey, Leo, I have a question about Slingbox and one about what the newest Verizon hardware would be to get now with a better camera. I have a Droid X right now, but I have one of my other phones are up, and I was wondering, other than the iPhone, I want to wait for the 5. I have a lot of phones, and I'll be replacing most of them in the next 6-8 months. But
Ted, you're a man after my own heart, a cell phone fanatic.
Exactly. Well, you know what? You remember the old Red Fox show there, the Junkyard Show?
Yeah. I'm coming with you.
In the cabinet looking for glasses all the time?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I am with cell phones.
You never. That's one way not to lose a phone is to have 12 of them. So yeah, I think you're right. The iPhone 5 will come out in June. The iPhone 4 has the best camera on any cell phone. I think that the Samsung Galaxy Series 5 megapixels are very good as well. The Droid X, you know, a lot of this is the software and the lens. The Droid X is 8 megapixels. But you probably notice there's a lot of flaring in the pictures I've found. They're not as crisp. They're not as high def as the 5 megapixel pictures coming out of the iPhone 4. A great way to do this, by the way, is to go to Flickr and search for the phone model you're interested in. Lots of people posting their camera phone pictures on Flickr. And you can see a whole bunch of pictures taken with any given camera phone. And that's a really great way to judge them. I think the Galaxy is very close to the iPhone 4. I'll be very curious to see what Apple does with the iPhone 5. Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, how are you? Leo Laborde here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk about all those cool techie things that are invading our lives. Computers, internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, 888-ASK-LEO, that's my phone number, 888-827-5536. If you'd like to join us anywhere in the U.S., that's toll-free. Outside the U.S., Skype in. Won't cost you a penny. 888-827-5536. So, Eric, this was a shock. On Thursday, we were wrapping up. I was wrapping up one of my podcasts, Windows Weekly, and somebody in the chat room, and I, this is one of the things I love about the chat room. They are like Twitter, like, well, Twitter's probably the next analogy. They're the early warning system. They're the news of the internet. You know, if you keep Twitter, you know, running in the background as I do, anything important happens, you're going to see it. And our chat room is like that. And probably what happened was it came first through the Twitter feed. The chat room saw it and picked it up and told me. But what a shocker. Google's earning call for their fourth quarter. And they announce, besides great earnings, that their CEO is stepping down. Google's boss is stepping down. And even a bigger surprise, one of the founders of Google, Larry Page, the man Google's PageRank is named after, the guy who figured out the whole thing back as a graduate student at Stanford, is taking over. That's kind of the reverse life cycle for most tech startups. Usually, the founders run it for a while and then realize they need some adult supervision. And they bring in a professional manager, somebody with lots of experience, like, let's say, oh, yeah, Eric Schmidt, who ran Novell for many years, has lots of experience as a CEO. They bring him in, and he runs the place, and that's it for the founders. They slowly fade away, you know, buy yachts, which they're doing. Larry's buying a 45-foot yacht. You know, buy Gulfstream private jets. They have several. Become playboys, you know, enjoy life. They're rich. They're rich. They don't need to run a company. And the founders fade off. This company goes public, makes everybody a lot of money, and then becomes just another company. Google's never been just another company, have they? They've always had a different kind of vision. In fact, Eric Schmidt tweeted about this, and he said, no adult supervision no longer needed. He says that they'd been talking about this since Christmas. I think Google has a tradition basically it was the three of them. Larry Page and Sergey Brin, who founded Google, and who in the early days of Google were very accessible. You could talk to them. They were great guys, very interesting, very smart. And then the adult supervision, Eric Schmidt, the CEO. Eric, in the last year, though, has kind of maybe been not a huge asset. I don't know. I can't speak for in how they feel internally. But I have to say, from the point of view of an outsider, a journalist covering Google, has not been a huge asset. He said things that just make people feel a little creepy about Google. He was the subject of that very creepy video. Remember, I don't know if I talked about this on the show, they showed it in Times Square. A public interest group made a video of Eric Schmidt as an ice cream man going around collecting information. It was a creepy ice cream man about the kids. It's really creepy. He'd really become the focus of people's nervousness about Google and Google's intentions. And, you know, he kind of looked the part. He wasn't the young, hip entrepreneur. He was the suit. And he said things that were a little odd. So I have to wonder if some of this is the founder saying, yeah, well, thank you. You're running the company well, but we don't think you represent the company that well. He's going to be moved upstairs, basically up and out is what they call it. Larry Page will run the company. He'll be the CEO starting in April 4th. And Sergey Brin, the other founder, is going to be the product guy. This is kind of how a traditional startup works. It may be part of it is that Google wants to be more like a startup and less like a mainline big company. They've always kind of thought that would be the best way to be. In fact, it's one of the things that kind of hurt Microsoft is that loss of the entrepreneurial spirit, of the nimbleness, of the aggressiveness of a startup. And once you become a company like IBM, you're just coasting. And I think Google doesn't want that to happen to them. So quite a shock. And, you know, one of the questions a lot of people say is, well, was he fired? Well, I don't think he stepped down voluntarily. There was no talk about this. It just happened quite suddenly. I think it's in all likelihood he's going willingly. They gave him a $100 million bonus. He is a multi-billionaire, thanks to Google. Doesn't need the money. There's probably a lot of other things he can do. It's not a question of that. There's some pride, I'm sure, involved. And he was very gracious in his post. He blogged about it. But the tweet is a little, shows some sting, doesn't it? No more adult supervision needed. The kids are taking over. There's a little sting. I sense a little hurt. Here's some of the Gizmodo. Thanks to the chat room for posting this link. Gizmodo had a post. 10 things we can't believe Eric Schmidt ever said. One of the things that Larry and Sergey said is our motto is don't be evil. We don't want to be evil. We want to be a successful company without doing evil. Eric said once, one person's definition of evil is another person's different definition. Huh? Here's another one. One day we had a conversation where we figured we could just try and predict the stock market, and then we decided it was illegal, so we stopped doing that. Eric's the guy who said, we want Google to tell you what you should be doing next. You know, I understand what Eric's saying, and I don't. It doesn't scare me, but it doesn't come off well when he says more and more searches are done on your behalf without your needing to type. I actually think most people don't want Google to answer their questions. They want Google to tell them what they should be doing next. Now, I understand what he means when he says that, but boy, that scares normal people like crazy. To me, that's what we want. We want the computer to be smart enough to kind of know what we want so we don't have to ask it. We just, you know, it just says, oh, I know where you are. You're probably looking for this. Let me give you that information. That doesn't bother me as a technologist, but I bet it bothers a lot of other people, and it's probably not the right thing for your CEO to be saying in public. Here's one of his most famous ones. Google's policy is to get right up to the creepy line and not cross it. I don't think people hear that and not cross it. They just hear Google's policy is to get right up to the creepy line. Eric, I can just imagine. But one of the reasons we like Google is they're not quite so polished. I'd be a lot more scared of Google if they were really polished and effective and had a great, you know, PR front. And in a way, it's kind of interesting to hear the CEO say what he really thinks. However, I have to think that it hurt him a little bit. Those are all this year. Or 2010, I should say. And so I think that it's telling that Eric is moving down, that Larry Page, the founder, is moving in. And I think the goal is to make Google back, turn Google back into an entrepreneurial startup where they began. Can they do it? Be interesting to watch. We don't know if Keith Olbermann or Eric Schmidt were fired, but boy, it sure looks like they both were, doesn't it? 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's talk about your tech, because I know people like gossiping about this kind of thing, but really, this show is about helping you use computers and getting the most out of them. 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-8275-536, and More of your calls coming up in just a little bit. The website is techguylabs.com. And if you want to join us in the chat room, that's really a fun place to be. That's where the side conversations go on. That's irc.twit.tv. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, let's face it, we're all trying to save money these days. We're all trying to find the best value for the buck. And when I think about value, man, the first thing that comes to mind, DSL Extreme, the best value in high-speed internet. Amazing. $14.95 a month. You're going to save hundreds of dollars a year. With DSL Extreme, everything's just as fast. There's no dialing in. There's no waiting on downloads. You can surf the net, store your photos, download music and video, get driving directions and everything. I love DSL Extreme. That's who I use. And at $14.95 a month, that's who you ought to be using. And by the way, they don't upsell you. There's no setup fees. The modem's free. The spam protection's free. Free 24/7 support. You even get email powered by Google with... Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I was on Regis and Kelly on Tuesday. That was fun. Kelly Ripa celebrating her 10th anniversary, but I didn't realize this. I went back and looked at the calendar. It's also the 10 years I've been doing that show, showing them gadgets. This case, the CES gadgets, including a really cool concept electric car from GM, the Envy. Electronically networked vehicle. Really neat stuff. Of course, somebody forgot to turn it on. I couldn't open it up, but we got them in there. Was it quite a shock, actually, because, you know, I've been doing that show for 10 years. Regis has been doing it for a little longer. But Regis is pushing 80 years old. And, you know, there's always the question, well, how much longer is he going to do it? And he announced that day on Tuesday. He said, and nobody expected this, certainly not me, but not even any of the producers. They were all their jaws dropped. He said, just wanted to let you know I'm leaving the show. I'll do later this year. And they were all, whoa. It's quite a powerful moment backstage, I can tell you. And then later that day, after I did the live bit, because, you know, I love Regis and Kelly because it's live. I love live. This is live. I love doing live. They had asked me ahead of time. They said Regis made the New Year's resolution that he would learn to use Twitter. So we heard you taught Steve Martin some stuff. We would like you to teach Regis to Twitter. I said, well, Steve Martin's a little bit ahead of the game, but let me do what I can. So after the show, I went upstairs and went to Regis's office, which is fantastic, lined with books, full of green. You know, he's a huge Notre Dame fan. So it's filled with Notre Dame memorabilia. And it's, you know, just, how many years? 50, 60, 70, I don't know, years of show business in there. Just great. I do believe, I think I saw, and I think it's probably true, he's the longest running continuous guy in showbiz on TV right now. I don't think there's anybody who's been doing it as long as Regis Philbin, and I can tell you this, I don't think there's anybody as good at it. He is amazing. So it's really a educate. He's taught me so much. I was glad to teach him Twitter. So we sat down and I said, okay, Regis, let's do your first tweet. We got Twitter up on the screen. You're logged in. You see where it says what's happening? Well, just type. You get 140 characters. Just type something. And so he said, well, I'd like to type, you know, I just announced that I'm leaving the show, but don't worry, I'm not retiring. I said, that's great. Go ahead. So he said, he looked at the keyboard, said, where's the I? And I thought, oh, we're in trouble. Fortunately, this was, and now I understand why Michael Gelman wanted to pre-tape this. This was pre-taped so they could edit out. It took him a while. He typed it out. I helped him a little bit. There were some typos. I said, leave him in, Regis. Then they know it really is you, not some publicist typing. Because if it's a publicist, it's going to be spelled perfectly, punctuated perfectly. It'll be just so. I said, this is good. This is you. And at the end, type dash R so we know it's Regis tweeting on this account because it's a Regis and Kelly account. And which is at Regis _and_Kelly. Kelly's been doing all the tweeting. And then they do have, as most superstars do, they have a professional Twitter person. Regis calls her Twitterella, who does their tweets for them. But when you see dash K, that's Kelly really wrote that. And she's very technical and very literate. And if you see, if you ever see one with Dash R, Regis did it. The thing that was interesting, and I think this is where Regis really realized the potential of Twitter. Somebody from, you know, old school media guy, old school TV guy, in this new technology, this new media, I think he realized something. I said, now, you did that tweet, Regis. Now we can see people's responses to you. He said, you can? I said, yeah. See that link that says mentions? Click that. Those are all the people answering you back. And there were, of course, hundreds, thousands. And he started scrolling through them. He couldn't believe it. He said, these are people just responding? I said, yeah. They're in the order. The top one is the one that just came. He said, that just came. And I said, look, 29 new ones just came in. And he couldn't believe it. He was so excited about it. He called his wife. He called Joy and said, you got to go to Twitter and see what they're saying. Because we're all saying, Regis, we're going to miss you. You can't leave. And I don't think he really had ever had that kind of direct feedback from his audience before. It was brand new to him. I said, you're having a conversation. He said, I could talk to the audience. I said, yeah. I think he was very excited by that. So it was really fun to see somebody almost 80 years old, been on TV for 60 years, never had that direct contact with the audience. You know, he has a live studio audience. And you know, to their credit, Kelly and Ripa wade into the audience, sign autographs during commercials. I mean, they're very, very friendly. But to get that feedback from thousands of people in real time blew his mind. I loved it. And I think he was very moved. It was a good time to be teaching Regis to Twitter. Watch. I don't think we'll see a lot of tweets from him, but watch their feed at @Regis_Kelly. The video of the segment I did, I think, is on their site. I think it's go.abc.com/Regis and Kelly, something like that. And you can see the segment I did. It was a lot of fun. Loved doing that. And then the video that we shot of Regis tweeting, they're going to do a Twitter week, the last week of January. I think they told me January 31st that would air, but I'll get when they have a solid date, I'll let you know. But I think the current thinking is Monday, January 31st, that begins their Twitter week. Back to the phones we go. Let's go to St. Louis in St. Louis, Missouri. David is on the line. Hi, Dave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
Great. Welcome thanks to the show. What can I do for you?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I just recently retired my old Palm Pre and got myself an HTC Evo Android phone.
I think a good choice. How do you like it?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, it's a nice computer. And it actually makes phone calls, too. It's awesome.
Yeah, Sprint's got actually a pretty good network. Now, the only issue with that is battery life.
Exactly. Well, you know, I was really having a hard time with the Pre, and that's actually why I went to the Evo, just to get better battery life. The Pre was just killing me. I had to have that thing plugged in all the time.
So, that's good. So you're not complaining about the Evo. It's as short as the life on the Evo is, it was worse on the Pre.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I loved WebOS, but, you know, the hardware was just not there.
You know, we are going to see a new WebOS, WebOS 2 from HP. HP bought Palm, and I think February 7th they're making an announcement. So I suspect we will see something interesting in terms of WebOS. I agree with you. I liked WebOS. I think the Pre was not a great piece of hardware. It was underpowered.
Yeah, that would be great if they could continue on the Palm saga, you know? I mean, they've been around for a long time and
I agree. Yeah, they were breakthrough.
So, about the Evo though, about Android in general, I was trying to, you know, manage my Wi-Fi and my 3G, 4G connections to, you know, save the battery life, and I constantly find myself turning them on and off based upon when I come home and have my nice Wi-Fi hotspot. And
yeah,
thinking, you know, maybe there's a smarter way to do this with an app out there, or maybe I can even develop one. I have a little bit of developing background, but, you know, wouldn't it be nice to show up at a common hotspot like my house or a coffee shop and this thing just turn on the Wi-Fi and turn off the 3G and off we go, and instead of me having to do it manually.
Let me talk to you about it. That's a great idea, and I have some suggestions. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, will answer your question right after this. the Tech Guy Show, brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazingly low price. Call 866, the number 2, get net to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888, ask Leo. Dave was asking, he has a new Evo, and he was saying, well, I'd like to, when I show up at a place, have the Wi-Fi recognized and have it start using Wi-Fi automatically. And of course, your phone will do that. That's, you can set it to do that. I was talking to Kyle, who's in here in a Droid. What is that? An Incredible? What is it? The HTC Desire HD he's using. And so I use Android too. And iPhone is the same story. You can say, you know, if you see an open access spot, let me know. And you can even have a join. I think you can have a join automatically. If not, there are programs like Locale, which is a great Android program, and Tasker, right? Which will notice and have you join automatically. In fact, Locale is cool because Locale turns things on and off more than just the Wi-Fi, depending on where you are. And you configure it. So you say, well, if I'm here, do this. If I'm there, do that. Only do this when I'm on this access spot, that kind of thing. And that's pretty cool. All of these things will use battery life. Even using the feature that when you see Wi-Fi join, open Wi-Fi, join it automatically, which the Evo will do, even that is using battery because periodically it has to go out and say, do I see Wi-Fi? Is there any Wi-Fi here? Anytime. And in order to do that, what does it do? It turns on the Wi-Fi, turns on the antenna, looks around. All of that's going to use some juice. If, as in Dave's case, he's so happy because the pre was worse. If you're happy with the Evo, then I think turn those things on. Maybe take a look at Tasker or Locale. Locale's a very cool program. For example, whenever I am in the car, my phone's plugged in. Whenever I'm at my desk in my office, my phone's plugged in. So, you know, I'm always charging my phone back up. I only really notice the lack of battery life when I'm out in the field and I just can't plug in anywhere. Traveling, things like that. And for cases like that, maybe get an extra battery. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's get back to the phones. Frank in Fresno. You've been hanging on for a while. Frank, thanks for your patience. What can I do for you?
Hey, morning, Leo. Hey, thank you for taking my call. Hopefully it's not too foggy up there compared to here in this area.
Are you kidding? I'm up in Northern California. It's a beautiful, it's like 65 degrees. The sun. I don't want to say that because a blizzard's hitting our friends on the East Coast right now.
Hey, two quick questions, Leo. The first one has to do with my speed on my computer. The second would be my printer, Epson. Anyway, the first question, how do I improve my speed? Because I finished building my computer back in, I think, September or August, last time I talked to you. It has 12 gigs of RAM. It's running on Intel 7, Windows 7 as well.
Boy, that's fast. Everything's fast.
Yeah.
But you're saying it should be faster.
Right. Now, is it hugging the RAM somewhere or is there a...
I would guess you've got a very fast processor. You've got more RAM than you need. You got plenty of RAM. And you don't have too much RAM. You added it, I noticed, in triplets, which is in some situations, that's what you want to do. 12 is a good number. Sometimes, you know, it's 3, 6, 9. Sometimes it's 2, 4, 6, 8. You add your RAM. Depends on the processor. But you can't go wrong with 12. It's both odd and even. You know, it's divisible by 3 and 2. So I think you're all right with the amount of RAM. I would guess it's I/O.
I/O.
Input. Yeah. Input output. A lot of stuff on your computer is what there. When you look at a task that a computer is doing, you can most commonly divide it between tasks that are CPU bound, that are dependent on how fast the CPU is, GPU bound, how fast the graphics card is, or I/O bound, how fast disk access is. And for a fast computer, you need to have all, you know, you need to have the appropriate speed where you need it. You've got plenty of CPU. You're definitely not CPU bound. For things that run out of memory, you've got plenty. So things like Photoshop, where you have lots of data in memory, 12 is great. I would bet you got a very fast graphics card to go with that i7. If you didn't, You should have. So I doubt your GPU, Ben. And that only, by the way, comes up when you're playing video games, frankly. 3D rendering in real time. So I'm going to guess that you got everything else settled. It's the I.O. that's slow. It's one of the reasons that, for instance, we were talking about the MacBook Air. Now, that's a slow processor. And they only start with 2 gigs of RAM. And yet people say, this is a fast computer. Why is it so fast with a 1.6 gigahertz Core 2 processor? And that's a slow processor. Well, because it's got an SSD, a solid state drive that's really fast. And it turns out a fast hard drive can make the whole computer seem faster. So my guess, Frank, is that you didn't get fast enough hard drives. You spent a lot of money, so maybe the thing to do if you want to spend a little bit more is get a small solid-state hard drive for your boot disk. 64 gigs would be plenty. Put Windows and your apps on there. Now, it's too small to put a lot of data on, and I bet you have a lot of data, video, movies, pictures, that kind of thing. So put the data on a regular spinning drive, even the one you've got probably, is fine. By booting from and running your stuff off a solid-state drive, things will speed up incredibly. Get a good solid-state drive. I'll tell you what. Go to pcper.com and look at their solid-state drive recommendations. PC Perspective. My friend Alan Malventano is a solid-state drive nutball. He's just a guru of solid-state drives, knows everything there is to know about it, and he's reviewed them all, and those reviews change a lot. Generally speaking, look for one with a SandForce controller. He'll tell you which makes use those controllers. Corsair is very good. That's what I use. That can make a huge difference. Another thing to do is perhaps if the computer, if you've been using it for a while, it's not that it gets fragmented, but it's that bad sectors on a drive can really slow you down. So a program like SpinWrite, which is a $90 program, don't run it on the solid state drive, but run it on the spinning drive, the standard drive. If a sector is marginal, cannot be read readily by the computer, but you need that data, maybe a bit of Windows is sitting on that, the computer will slow down as it tries to read it. And if there's a bunch of marginal disk sectors, that can actually slow everything down. So I'm saying look at the disk, get a faster drive, the solid state drive, and if you've got a spinning disk, scan that and make sure you don't have bad or marginal sectors. SpinWrite is a good program for that. You run it on that disk. It'll say, if I can't read this right away, I'm going to move data off of it and mark it unusable. That can make a big difference. It's I.O. that really, if you've got everything else, and you do, I.O. that really can make a big difference there. We often ignore the speed of the disk. May I make one more recommendation? Make sure you have a good backup strategy. You've got a lot of data. You got to back it up. And if you're going to back it up, do it right, Pilgrim. Do it right, Pilgrim, with Carbonite. I'm sorry. That's a bad impression. Today could be the day one of those three things happen to your computers. It crashes, or you get a virus worming its way into your hard drive, or maybe you just, drop your laptop or lose it. You know, thousands of laptops are lost every single day at airports. In an instant, all your pictures, all your priceless files, your data, lost forever. How would you feel? If you got Carbonite Online Backup, that takes the sting out of it because your data's safe. Carbonite's easy. It's automatic. Anybody can start right now for free at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo. And this is something I really want to remind people about. It's in a way, a great solution because it gives you access to your data no matter where you are. You log on to your Carbonite account. You can get your data on an iPhone, on a BlackBerry, on any computer, anytime, anywhere. Try it free. It's $55 a year for PC or Mac at Carbonite.com. But you've got a free 15-day trial there if you use my name, Leo. When you check out, when you decide to buy, and I know you will, use my name, Leo, for an additional 2 free months. Carbonite.com. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right at Carbonite. Ben in Minneapolis coming up at 47 after the hour. He wants to know, what kind of memory to put in his Windows phone? Bad news. You can't. Details to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The Tech Guy. I like this music. Website is techguylabs.com. This is episode 737. Ben's on the line from Minneapolis, Minnesota. You have a Windows phone, Ben?
Hey, Leo. Yeah, I don't know if you remember me. I called a little while, about a month or so ago. I'm blind. I was asking you about what is the best phone to get for persons with disabilities.
And I said the iPhone.
Well, yes, you did. And I was a little apprehensive about that. And I think more and more, as I've looked into it, I've got a bit of news. I actually got a hold of some AT&T product development people. They got me in touch with some Samsung development people and some LG development people, but none of them had any answers to questions as to how the best to serve my needs. Finally got the president phone number for Microsoft, who developed
Wow. You know, Microsoft, I met a woman this summer who had, Microsoft hired an accessibility expert whose job was to make sure accessibility was built into every Microsoft product. Her portfolio was completely across all the product line. So they do, you're right, they are very aware of this and they do want to make sure that their stuff is accessible. So what did they say?
Well, I haven't actually gotten back with anybody yet. I am still working in process. It's taken me a while just to get this footwork done.
Yeah. I'm glad you're an activist on this, though, Ben. Because what you're doing is helping everybody.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
As not just for me as a person with disability, but the whole tech industry, because it just makes life so much easier. Because it's going to come down to the day where you walk into your house and you talk to your computer.
Well, to be honest, a lot of the technologies we use, especially in phones, come from things that were developed for accessibility originally. But including on-screen keyboards, Zoom pinch, a lot of things that we have taken for granted came from the accessibility department. So you're absolutely right. Improving accessibility does improve it for everybody. So what did Microsoft tell you?
You got it. And I just want to say, I listen to it all the time. I love
Thank you.
Your network. And you're absolutely right. A lot of things do get taken from the disability side of things, but a lot of it does come from the science fiction end of it, too. I know you're a big proponent of Audible. If I could recommend a book to you, The Unincorporated Man.
The Unincorporated Man.
It's a great read. I'm sure you will find it fascinating and a foretelling of the future of just a whole lot of things.
Who wrote it?
Microsoft, they've really wanted to keep me steered in the direction of their phones, but come to find out, a lot of the memory cards don't work with Windows phones.
In fact, Microsoft and the manufacturers, when I bought my Windows 7 Samsung Focus, Windows Phone 7 Samsung Focus, the AT&T guy, and this was on launch day, told me, he said, we got a bulletin, do not put an SD card in it. And Microsoft said that they would fix this. They haven't yet. It's unclear. Now, if you listen to my podcast, Ben, and I take it you do, then you might listen to Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is very much all over this. He's our Windows guy and an expert. He wrote the book Windows Phone Secrets. He believes that this issue comes from the fact that Windows Phone uses, you know, most phones that have SD cards use them as an extra disk. That's all. You know, when I plug in my phone, it shows up as a disk. I can copy stuff over it. It can look at it. Windows Phone 7 uses it as an integral part of the operating system. So Paul says, if the card is not good enough or fast enough, it can actually break the phone. The phone will stop working. So what Microsoft has realized is that not all SD cards, and these are the micro SD, not all micro SD cards are made alike. That some big name manufacturers' cards will not work with Windows Phone 7 because they're not reliable or fast enough. And so what they need to do is a certification program. What they're hoping to do is a certified for Windows Phone 7. But so far, nothing has happened. Paul has become greatly disillusioned, by the way, with Microsoft. They promised updates to the phone by now. Nothing's happened. They're now backing down on that. It is kind of a mess, unfortunately. And to my knowledge, the advisory still being given out by AT&T and T-Mobile is you may not put an SD card in your phone. Just don't. Now, I know a lot of people who have and haven't had problems. So if you're willing to spend money to try cards, please do. But as for now, it's not recommended by the companies that make these phones or by Microsoft. And I hope to have an update on that for you at some point in the future. But that's how it is right now. It's a shame. Hey, before we go on, and we got to thank you for the call, Ben. It's great to talk to you. I want to talk to John in Santa Monica a little bit about Skype. But before we go on, I want to talk about a brand new product from the folks who make Nod 32, ESET. You know about ESET and Nod 32. I recommend it all the time as the best antivirus for Windows. Well, now cybersecurity for the Mac is here from ESET. ESET's world-famous lightweight computer protection is now on the Mac, and they made a very Mac-ish, very nice version of it. You can get it at Apple stores nationwide, also Micro Center and Fry's. Of course, as always, it proactively detects bad things as they happen before they hit you. But they also include in ESET Cybersecurity for the Mac, a brand new free educational component. And I think education, what your behavior is so important to protecting yourself online. This is a great, I think all security products should do it. But right now it's Nod 32 and Cybersecurity for the Mac. You can try it free for 30 days. Go to eset.com/Mac. For a free test drive, eset.com/Mac. For years, I've been saying, if you use Windows, you need Nod 32. Now I can say it. If you use Macintosh, you need ESET Cybersecurity for the Mac. Try it free right now at eset.com/Mac. We lost that call. I was going to talk about Skype. Well, let's go to Tom then in Thousand Oaks. Tom, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I have a couple of questions to ask you. But first, we really enjoy listening to your show. We've learned a lot.
Thanks.
From it.
Thank you.
My wife and I, about a month ago, bought a HD TV and a Blu-ray player. We really like it.
Isn't it great? And I really think that buying the Blu-ray player is what brings it to life, because then you see what it's capable of.
Well, that's part of my question. It's a Sony ES. It's a new one. I hooked up the wireless portion to it, so to run it off my G modem here. But I'm thinking of running a LAN connection to it, running Cat6.
And you're speaking of when you want to, say, stream Netflix movies or things like that.
Right. And this is a direct
internet content. And by the way, this is one of the great things now that's happening with Blu-ray players. They have an Ethernet port, they have Wi-Fi, and now you can pull in internet content like your Netflix movies, streaming movies, right through them. And I think that's great.
Well, here's my question. I'm running DSL. My speed's running about 2.8 meg. And I'm wondering if that's really fast enough to be streaming HD movies.
Oh, yeah. Nominally, it is.
Yeah.
And this is what happens. First of all, Wi-Fi might slow that down or make it less consistent. So plugging it in hardwired, if you're having problems, could very well be the difference. The other problem is sometimes internet access, especially slower internet access, is inconsistent. So it might be 2.8 when you measure it, and then 1.0 every once in a while. And the problem is that's not fast enough. So it's low enough that you might have issues, especially if other people are using the internet at the same time.
Right.
So you want to, if it's just you and your wife and you're not using the internet, it should be plenty.
Well, down the road, probably within a year or so, Verizon's going to put Fios in here, and I'll probably hook up to their data.
Then you'll be great. Yeah. Have you noticed a problem, or are you just worried about it?
No, I haven't. You know, we downloaded, we watched some YouTube stuff on there, which is low resolution.
Yeah, YouTube actually is worse than Netflix. Netflix does a lot of very smart stuff about buffering, about slowing itself down, you know, lowering the quality if it's not a... It's actually very smart and can work in a lot. I use it in Wi-Fi, and it works fine. Every once in a while, we'll get buffering.
Is the buffering done at the Netflix end, or is it done at the Blu-ray player?
It's Netflix.
Okay. Well, then you've answered my question. I'll go ahead and running at my hardwire over there.
Certainly, if you're having problems, you might find that Wi-Fi is plenty. I would try it with Wi-Fi. But if you're having problems, going hardwired will definitely make a difference. It's always faster than Wi-Fi and more consistent.
Well, then, one follow-up question. It's a short one. Would you recommend, I'm running a wireless G, would you recommend wireless N router then?
Well, since you haven't had any problems yet, I would just try it and see.
All right.
And then N would be better. Hardwired would be best still. But you know what? Try it with G, Tom. It might work great. And thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come right after this. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by Carbonite. It's backup done right. You got to back it up to get it back. And the best way to do it automatically to the cloud with Carbonite.com. Try it free for 2 weeks. You don't even need a credit card. Just my name, Leo. Carbonite.com. Offer code Leo. You know, a lot of companies put out toolbars that will, quote, enhance your browsing experience. A lot of times all they do is spy on you. Skype puts out a toolbar. Mozilla has lately been doing more and more of this, blocking stuff they say is buggy. They blocked on Friday the Skype toolbar because they say it's just not reliable. Users who install the Skype toolbar in Mozilla will be notified that it's been disabled. You can re-enable it, but they're saying it's not a good idea. Skype, Mozilla has a, what they call it, an add-on management group that keeps track of add-ons to the browser. They said last week 40,000 Firefox crashes were caused by Skype toolbar. Now, remember, there's probably 100, 200 million Firefox and Mozilla browsers in the world, so that may not be such a big number relatively, but they also say, and this is probably more relevant to them, it's so inefficient it can slow down your page rendering by a factor of 300. That's a big one. Whether it crashes your browser is one thing, but if it slows your browsing down 300 times, get rid of it. So if you upgrade Firefox and suddenly it's turning off the Skype toolbar, now you know why. I think this is an interesting, Firefox has been very aggressive about disabling stuff or turning off stuff that it thinks is not safe. And I think ultimately this is probably the right thing to do if you're making a browser. The browser right now is the number one way bad guys get into a system. So it does kind of behoove you to make sure it's a little bit safer. Let's see. We got John back from Santa Monica, California, speaking of Skype. Hi, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Sorry we hung up on you.
Yeah. Actually, my phone dropped out.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad we could get you back. What can I do for you?
My wife has a MyTouch Android MyTouch 4 phone with Quick.
Uh-huh.
And is it possible she can take video from her phone and I can watch it live on the computer or my computer?
You bet. That's what Quick does. Q-I-K. Didn't they just get bought by somebody? Who bought Quick? Somebody just bought them.
I believe Skype.
I think you're right. So the whole idea, when Quick first launched, the whole idea of Quick was that you put this program on your phone and you're broadcasting. And she can go to the computer, go to your Quick account at Quick.com and watch.
Well, I can't get Quick. I went to it on my computer and I can only download like the portable Quick. It doesn't have Quick.
You don't need to download anything. So but what you do need is the name of her Quick account.
Oh, so I just need her name.
If you know what account name she has on Quick, what she broadcasts with, you surf to a page on Quick, and there she is.
Oh, that's all I got to do.
All you got to do. You thought you needed more. No, you don't need a program.
I thought Quick was phone to phone, not phone to computer.
Well, they also have phone to phone, and for that you need it on your phone. But if you're watching on a computer, you don't need anything.
Will Skype be available for the Android phones?
Skype is available for Android phones, you bet. And Skype on Android, I believe, does video now. I have to check. Does it, Kyle? Do you know? It's, you know what? Here's the issue. Verizon. The carriers also have something to say about this, and sometimes they keep companies from adding capabilities to the phone for whatever reason. There are, I use three different programs. You should try each of them. They're all free. To do face, you know, first of all, you have to have a camera, a front-facing camera on your phone. Otherwise, it's kind of crazy because, you know, yeah. I would look at Skype. I would look at something called Fring, F-R-I-N-G. And I would look at something called Tango, T-A-N-G-O. All three of them will do video phone calls from a Android phone, providing that Verizon allows it.
Okay.
Tango, T-A-N-G-O, Fring,
T-Mobile.
Skype. She's on T-Mobile?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, T-Mobile doesn't. They'll let you do anything. That's what I'm using. Skype works on T-Mobile as well.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Leo.
You're very welcome. I don't, you know, it's funny because Apple made a lot of hay with FaceTime. Remember? They announced on the iPhone 4, and now with FaceTime, a front-facing camera, and you can make video calls. And even at the time, I thought, this is a gimmick. Nobody really wants to do this. Do you? I'd be very curious. It's my opinion. Obviously, John wants to do it with his wife. But it's my opinion that they're really people, maybe I'm just an old-fashioned kind of guy. But I don't think people want to make video calls particularly. I think they're perfectly happy with audio calls. Video, you have to hold the thing in front of your face. You got to look at the person. You want to make it fix your hair, put a little makeup, powder your nose. It's too much work. Just get on the phone and talk. So I don't know. I think FaceTime's a gimmick. I think putting video conferencing in cell phones is kind of a gimmick. I just don't know if it's one of those things that we were promised in 1964 at the World's Fair. Remember, AT&T had a video phone booth. Remember in the movie 2001, he goes into the phone booth on the moon and calls his daughter, and she's and we've been promised that. For so many years, I think people really expect it on the phone. Now, I have to say, I use Skype with video on my computer all the time. But you're sitting down, you're on the computer, you got a camera on your computer. You don't have to hold anything in front of your face. It feels more natural. So I make a lot of Skype video calls, and I see people doing that all the time. I was at the airport the other day, and there was a guy calling his mom in China on Skype at the airport. And I think that I understand. Now, she had video and everything. It's the little portable phone thing I don't get. Am I wrong? I mean, I use Skype. When my daughter lived in France, I use Skype. Now that she's in college, I use Skype. Quick is, if you go to quick.com, going to be doing two-way video chatting. So they'll be add Quick to Skype, Fring, and Tango. I know it sounds like I'm making this stuff up. Mobile video chat. This is why Skype bought them. Works on the Sprint Evo, the Samsung Epic. On T-Mobile, the MyTouch 4G, that's the one she has, right? And the Galaxy Tab, that's kind of cool. That's the Samsung 7-inch tablet. And presumably more phones to come. I suspect that's the influence of, that's what happens when Skype buys you. You get some money, you can start putting some features in. Everybody's going after this market. Is this something you do? Maybe the kids. Are the kids doing this? I know they do video chat on the computers. When my son says, good night, I'm going to bed, and he goes upstairs, I can hear him start chatting for hours. Henry, I know what you're doing up there. They're doing video chat. So I know the kids do this, but on your phone? When you hold a cell phone in front of your face and make a video chat? I could see maybe if you're buying shoes and you wanted to show somebody, what do you think of these? I could see some applications. Baby's first steps. Look. But most of the time, don't you just want to put the phone to your ear, talk, and then hang up? 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. You tell me. 888-827-5536. The website is techguylabs.com. The chat room is in there. You can join us in the chat room. I call them my brains. They're so smart. Techguylabs.com. More of your calls are right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thank you.
LaPorte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number if you want to call in. Talk. I'm looking at the chat room, and they're all saying, oh, no, we want to make video calls. We want. Okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just old guy. Hey, where are you kids today? What do you want to take pictures of yourself for? Radio is good enough for my day. What do you need that TV for? Maybe that's it. Or is it? 8888 Ask Leo. I haven't seen any evidence. I have to say, Apple went crazy about FaceTime, and they did all those ads. Remember all the ads of the grandpa seeing the baby for the first time and tears coming to his eyes? It's beautiful. And I'll acknowledge, though, you know, those are great moments. Those are, but they're rare, aren't they? And most of the time, what you're calling and say, I'm going to be home in a minute. You want me to pick up anything at the grocery store? Or where are you? I've been waiting half an hour. Do you really want video for that? GMK in the chat room says, just got off a FaceTime video chat with my oldest daughter at Lake Tahoe, which is gorgeous today. I loved connecting with her and her friends at their weekend lodge. All right. Maybe I'm an old fart. There, I said it. Tom in Thousand Oaks, Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Hi, Tom. Wait a minute. We already talked to you, Tom. That's the question about the Blu-ray player. Let's go to John in Ontario, California. Hey, John.
Hey, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I was given a used Pentium 4 this week to replace the Pentium 4 that is dying with the blue screen of death every 30 minutes now. And it has Windows 2000 XP on it. I have all the passwords for the network. What do you recommend to get rid of that and an operating system for it?
What do you want to put on it? Oh, you're asking me what I recommend.
Yeah, and how do I
problem
get it
is off? The Pentium 4. I mean, you're...
Yeah, it's older, but...
You're older? It's...
It's a dinosaur.
How much RAM is in there? Do you know?
1 megabyte.
All right. I would not recommend changing from XP. XP is even too modern for it. Because a megabyte of RAM is not enough to run any modern operating system. One thing you might consider if you want to polish it up is Linux. But that's an enthusiast's operating system. Takes a little work. It's not what you're used to, and you probably won't be able to get, you know, a lot of help for it. I think you better stick with what is it 2000 or XP that's on there? Which is it?
2000.
Yeah. That's 2000 is that era. And it's a great operating system, but here's the rub, and this is Microsoft doesn't want you to own that computer. Microsoft is no longer supporting Windows 2000 with security fixes or bug fixes.
And you can't even get Google Chrome for 2000.
You can't.
No, I tried.
That's the problem with a Pentium 4.
Yeah.
And 1 gigabyte of RAM. 1 gig sounds like a lot, doesn't it?
Compared to my old one?
In the days when 8 megabytes was a lot, a gigabyte sounds infinite. But, in fact, what happens is the expectation goes up as people's capabilities go up. And I wouldn't buy a computer with less than 4 gigabytes today. I certainly would install Windows 7 on anything with less than 2 gigabytes. You just don't have enough RAM. And I would not put any more memory in that thing because it's old enough that's probably not worth it. You know, in other words, John, stick with what you got.
What about my old Pentium 4 that was running XP just fine, but it overheats?
Well, you could run XP, but XP is still supported.
Yes, and that's
so you could do it. People in the chat room are saying that you know, Super PC says he has a friend who's running Windows 7 on a gigabyte. I don't think that fits the minimum specs that Microsoft puts out. It's certainly enough for XP. So yeah, maybe go to XP. The overheating is another issue that doesn't have to do with working too hard.
Put fan speed on the old computer, and it shows that the memory chip is heating up like to about 160 degrees before it turns off.
Yeah, like, you know, so it could be a lot of dust in there. It could be a lot of things. I mean, I'm thrilled somebody gave you a computer. They didn't give you anything worth more than $50. So because you really want to run in general the operating system that's roughly contemporary with the hardware. You go too far ahead in time, the expectations from the software is just too high. Christina in Bonzel, California. Never heard of that. Where's Bonzel?
Hi, Leo. I just love your fun-filled spirit and your tech wizardry.
Aren't you sweet? Thank you, Christina.
You're so fun. I love that. It makes it interesting.
Thank you.
Council is in North County, San Diego, about 45 minutes north of San Diego.
I bet you're having a beautiful day then.
Oh, yes, it is gorgeous. Well, Leo, I'm calling you because I'm in analysis paralysis. I tend to be an analyzer, and I'm driving myself crazy, and I thought that you could give me some direction. I would like to purchase an ebook. I'm not looking at money. That's not a concern right now. What I would like for you to do, if you could help me with this, I looked at Kindle, Nook, and, of course, I'm thinking of maybe the iPad, too. My one question is, on the iPad, too, I know it's not out yet, but would I be able to listen to audiobooks on that?
You can listen to audiobooks on both the Kindle and the iPad. Audiobooks from audible.com. And of course, if they're not protected, any audiobook. And in fact, the Kindle has a nice feature where it will read many books as long as the publisher doesn't disable this. It will read to you even if there's no audio version. Now, it's a kind of a little bit of a robotic voice, but not bad.
I see. Okay. Well, I could deal with that.
It is. You know, it's funny because a lot of times people will call me and they have done what you've done, which is they've done all the research and they are absolutely paralyzed. I have, you have a spreadsheet with all the facts. Now, what do I do? And some, you know, there's two ways to handle a call like this. Is one is to say, well, on the one hand, and then on the other hand, and not that wouldn't help you. The other way is to say, just buy a Kindle.
I love it.
Just buy a Kindle. Now, I will tell you the difference between an iPad and a Kindle. The iPad is much more than a Kindle. It's a multi-purpose computer that happens to have Kindle software on it. So anything that you buy on the Kindle, you can read on the iPad and vice versa. The iPad does support audiobooks, and because it has more storage, if that's an important thing for you, I think the iPad's a better choice because it's an iPod as well as a reader. But the Kindle will, you know, it has limited memory, but you could put an audiobook on it. It supports Audible books.
Okay, and does that have color as well?
Kindle does not have color. Now, that's part of its advantage, and this is, to me, the bottom line advantage.
Okay.
The Kindle is using an e-ink screen that looks great in bright light. It's very legible. Even at the beach in sunlight, it's like a book. You can read it. It's not quite black on white. It's black on a kind of greenish gray, but it's very high contrast. And it has no light coming out of it. It's not you. If you then get in bed and turn off the light, you can't read it. The iPad's exactly the opposite. It has an internal light. It's backlit. So you can read it in bed without any lights on. Great. But take it to the beach, it's illegible.
Oh, not a good thing.
So it depends where you're going to be reading. People who like, and the iPad's heavier. Kindle is light. The new Kindle is cheap, light, easy to read. If reading is the number one job, it's a great choice.
Okay, and here I'm trying to get you into more.
Hang on, I'll answer any follow-ups here in just a second. We've got to take a break. I have to say, the Kindle, there's a reason the Kindle is selling so well. It just does the job. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Carbonite.com. It's backup done right. If you haven't tried it, go there right now. Use the offer code Leo, and you can try it free for 15 days. You got to back it up to get it back, so do it right with Carbonite. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Macworld Expo coming up this week in San Francisco. Apple's not there. This will be the second year Apple's not there. And it's slowly dwindling, withering away, sad to say. But I'll be there. We'll be doing our Mac Break podcast from there. And, you know, I think it's important to have a show for Mac fanatics. But trade shows in general, with the exception of CES, the very notable exception of CES, just seem to be withering. I guess the internet and the fact that you can find out anything anytime, anywhere really kind of
eliminates the need for a get-together, a conference. You just don't need it.
We were talking to Christina about, I love it, analysis paralysis. She knows too much. Choosing an ebook reader, torn between the iPad, the Kindle, and the Nook. The Nook is color, by the way. The advantage that using the black and white e-ink has, besides the light, is that the battery life is great. You probably charge your Kindle once a week. I don't think that's such a huge advantage unless you're camping, because you're always next to a plug at night. After you're done reading, you plug it in.
Okay.
So big deal. I mean, I have to plug in my iPad every night. Big deal.
Okay. Well, the one thing I noticed in the chat room is someone did mention, well, you know, tell me a little bit more about the iPad. I just want to tell you something about myself first. I'm a minimalist. I'm not a gamer except for Angry Birds, which you got me into, and my husband thinks I've lost my mind.
Do you play that on the iPhone, or what do you play that on?
I've been playing it on my Android.
Okay. Well, you can put audiobooks on your Android, so you have a way of playing audiobooks now anyway.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize.
Yeah. Do you use audible.com? Is that where you get your books from?
Actually, I've not done it before. Someone has introduced me to some regular audiobooks that they receive through the mail. And I really...
The cassettes. Yeah. Well, we've traveled a little farther down that road. It's all digital now. Many libraries offer audiobooks, but I don't know... You know, there's a lot of copy protection from the library, and I don't know if they work on Android. But Audible does. Audible's my favorite. And I've been listening to audiobooks since I had a long commute 10 years ago.
Yeah. And that's what I want to do as well. I don't want to do the mail order thing. So
yeah.
iPad, of course, we don't know what the 2 is going to have, but I have a MacBook Pro. Again, that's because of you. I was PC. What could I do with the iPad 2 that might be helpful or that might add more fun to my life?
Well, that's one of the you know, if you like Angry Birds, you're going to love the iPad, because that kind of casual gaming is really spectacular on the iPad. There's a free Kindle app for it. So, you know, you may end up getting a Kindle. A Wi-Fi Kindle is $130.
Right.
So $139. You may end up getting a Kindle and keep that by your bed. That's your reading, and then have the iPad with you. And the nice thing is that when you read a book on the Kindle there and then you go to the iPad, it knows where you left off.
Oh, okay.
And we'll pick up where you left off. And that's great. I wish the audiobooks do that. They do not.
Oh.
Because it's got a full iPod on it. You can have all your audiobooks on it and additional music. I mean, there's a lot of space on an iPad, so you're not going to run out of space on it. And, you know, there's things like I use the iPad for GPS. It's got great maps. It's got a great GPS device. It's got a notebook program, calendar program, address book. You know, it's got lots of games like Angry Birds. If you haven't played Angry Birds on the iPad, you haven't played Angry Birds.
I know, and I would love to do that.
Don't tell your husband that's why you're getting it. But
he thinks I've flipped my lid, because I never do things like this. And it's hysterical. When I tell him I was on hold for you, he goes, okay, you've gone over the edge now.
He's intimidated. Don't worry, Christina. He'll come along eventually.
I don't know about that. But just the last question, I just wrote real quickly two things. With the iPad at the beach, is that going to be legible?
You know, I've read the iPad at the beach. It's not undoable, but you do have to get in the shade, because it's not a screen that does well in bright, bright, bright light, unfortunately.
Okay. And my last question is, I would love to come visit the folks at the cottage, and I emailed Eva, and apparently I wrote down the wrong email address.
Oh, yeah. So we have just so people understand what you're talking about, we have an open studio policy. Anybody who wants to come and watch the show can, but we also have very limited space. So my sister Eva keeps track of who's coming and when. She'll also make sure that I'm going to be around.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes I'm not here. Eva@twit.tv.
Oh, okay. I
and just tell her you're coming. And you know, we've just yesterday, I'm very pleased to announce, signed a lease for a brand new studio that is going to be spectacular, and we'll have plenty of room. And at that point, you won't have to check ahead of time. You can just show up.
Well, congratulations on your new building, and I hope you have a fabulous vacation.
Thanks, Christina. And come see us before we move, because we're moving probably early May.
Yes, well, that's what I'm trying to accomplish. So thank you.
Great.
For your assistance. I'm out of the trap of analysis paralysis.
It's so nice to meet you, Christine. I look forward to seeing you up here at the Twit Cottage, as we call it, a.k.a. the Tech Guy Labs. You know, we have two visitors right now, Kyle Hasegawa, who is from Tokyo, who's visiting today. He's actually in town with his new employer getting trained, and from Gainesville, Florida, Chucky J is in studio. It's always nice to have visitors in the studio. I always like doing that. Let me take a little bit of a little beady break. And Kyle, who do I need to talk about today? Do I have a commercial? Oh, of course. I thought I just talked about them. That's why. I don't mind talking about them again. You know me. I love Carbonite. Carbonite, it's back up, done, right. I want you to go to carbonite.com and find out more. I hate to say it, but today could be the day that the worst happens, you know. Your system crashes irreparably, or a virus or worm eats its way into your hard drive, or maybe you drop or lose your laptop computer. Think of all the data that's on there. Do you have a copy of it somewhere? If you don't, or if your copy's only local, you really need to do something about this. You need to have off-site, so if you know there's a fire or flood, your data's safe. You need to do it automatically because nobody ever remembers to back up. You need Carbonite. Carbonite, it's automatic, off-site backup, encrypted so you're safe, it's secure. And here's the best part about Carbonite Online Backup. It's available anytime, anywhere. So if you've been using something like Dropbox, for instance, to share files, Carbonite. Your whole drive will be backed up. And anywhere you can get online, you log onto your Carbonite account, there's your stuff. There's even a free iPhone and BlackBerry app for you. I mean, this is a great solution. Not just for backup, but just make for data availability. I want you to try it free for 15 days. You'll get a sense of it. All you have to do is go to Carbonite.com and use the offer code LEO. If you decide to buy Carbonite, it's very affordable, $55 a year. That's 15 cents a day for unlimited backup, all the data on your internal drive. And here's the nice thing. If you use my name LEO on checkout, you get 2 months free. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right. With Carbonite. Please, I beg you. Providence, Rhode Island, my old hometown. Brian's on the line. Hi, Brian.
Providence, Rhode Island, my old
hometown. Uh-oh. Brian's listening to the radio.
No, I'm here.
Hey, Brian.
Hi. Well, first, hello, thank you. I've sent you several emails and actually a handwritten letter, and this is the first time I've actually been able to get through.
Yay, I'm so glad to finally talk to you. Thank you.
I'll try to keep it short. What, did you get the letter?
Well, I get a lot of mail. I'm not sure. What was it about? You would think, it's funny because you're very clever, Brian.
I ran into your sister right before Christmas where her husband was
great.
Unemployed. I've been unemployed for a year and a half, and I was trying to help him find a job.
That's so great. Brian, hang on. I want to talk to you some more. For that, you get extra time. Hang on. We'll get back to you in just a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to keep taking calls for the next half hour or so, recording ahead of time for next month. So if you're on the line, do hang on the line, and I'll get to as many calls as I can. The show only has a few minutes left, but I will keep taking calls for at least another half an hour to 45 minutes. Leo Laporte, 8888, Ask Leo. Our gadget guru, Dick DiBartolo, join us in just a little bit. But I was talking with Brian in Providence. Still looking for work, Brian, or have you found it?
No, I'm a year and a half into the pit here in Rhode Island.
I know unemployment's very high in Rhode Island right now.
Oh, it's ridiculous. And this is what's prompting my call. I have two questions, and then I want to put you on the spot.
Okay.
One, I have the exact same gear that I think everybody else is using. I actually have your pretty gold heel, PR40, and I have the M-Audio, a Mackie mixer. I'm trying to do some photographer and model interviews. I'm a professional photographer, and I also have 27 years in IT and MCP and yada, 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 which is worthless anymore. But what I'm trying to do is understand how to use the Logitech on the Mac. Only because of...
There's no specific drivers for it, but it does work.
Yeah.
So you can't control a lot of the features, which is a shame. You know, some of the Logitech cameras do have drivers for the Mac. For some reason, the latest best ones, the C510, does not.
Well, I have the C910.
Same thing. No Mac drivers.
Right. And I'm using eyeglasses, which is what I understand is the only way to do it. But I don't know if that's giving me high res. I'm trying to put together a simple podcast where I'm going to be interviewing photographers and models for a website called One Model Place.
I love that idea. Now, the only reason you'd need the C510 or 910 is if you wanted to stream it live. Is that your goal?
Yes, on Justin.
Okay. If you want... A number of my hosts on my podcast use that camera with Macs.
Right.
Including Steve Gibson, I think that Jeff Jarvis and Gina do, and it works fine out of the box. You just can't control it.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I can control it with eyeglasses. I didn't know if you guys...
If you want addition, I don't know eyeglasses, but we just let them use it by as is.
Yeah, okay, the second part of the Logitech question is there anything other than multicast for $500 where I can use... two of these Logitechs, or three, to be able.
Yeah, they're all fairly expensive. You can try them for free in most cases. VidBlaster, Wirecast, which I think is what you meant when you said multicast, and Boinks TV. All three of them have free versions, however. But yeah, they're expensive. You know, duplicating what I do on my podcast network is non-trivial. It's the secret sauce. And it's doable. It's just expensive. And I've put, I don't know, well, several million dollars into it by now. So, you know, if you look at what I'm doing and say, I'd like to duplicate that, you're going to start a little slower in the long run. Dick DeBartolo's here, Mad Magazine's maddest writer and the Giz Whiz. Hey, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
I am very well. How are you?
Good. Did you get an aisle seat going back? That's the only thing I need to know.
Yes, I did. Thank you. You know how that worked? It was great. I don't know if it was you who told me to do this, but this is a great tip. It has nothing to do with tech, but it's a great tip. If you're flying on an airline that you don't have gold, but you'd like to get a better seat than the one that you've been assigned, and in my case, middle seats all the way, just go up to the desk at the gate agent. And say, hey, I know, I'm nothing special. Be very nice when you do this. I'm nothing special. But I know you're also going to be bumping some gold members up into first and business. When you do, can I have their seat? Because they've got good seats. They've got exit rows, aisles.
Yes.
And so those seats are actually going to be vacated. And if you're nice about it, they'll give you the seats. On the way out, I got a beautiful seat with lots of legroom on the window. And on the way back, same thing. So, yes, the answer is your technique works. Just ask the gate agent and be nice. And you know what Johnny Jett says, our travel expert? Bring a box of chocolates.
Oh, that's a great idea.
He has chocolates with him every time he travels.
That's a great idea. It's little perks. You give it away.
Yeah,
I carry a half a dozen Mad magazines. That's my box of chocolates.
There you go. That's very nice. Yeah. So that really worked really well.
I also called up and I canceled three elite first class tickets so that... There'd be plenty of seats.
This was on Delta, and actually, I do want to thank Delta because that was very nice of them. They made it very easy for me to fly back. Even though I had, that's the worst thing I ever heard of is a red eye flight to New York City in the middle.
No. I'll take the luggage rack.
Yeah, I'd rather have the luggage rack. So Dick usually has a great gadget for us. He is a Mad Magazine's maddest writer, well known in those circles, but also a complete gadget hound for years. And we do a podcast called The Daily Gizwiz, in which he reveals crazy gadgets, and we like to bring one to the radio show as well. What do you have for us today?
Okay, well, today is not too crazy because it's a gadget, and what brought it up is someone just sent me an email about how this saved their lives for them. It's from Western Digital. It's their Live Wire Powerline AV Network Kit.
Oh, you know, I've never used this, and I've always wondered how good it is.
Yes, and he had the same problem I did. I have no Wi-Fi in my apartment. I have Wi-Fi in the studio. I tried the thing called the Orb to send it wirelessly, and it worked fine with the doors open, with the doors closed. I was trying to get Netflix in my back apartment.
So in other words, because the walls are probably in your old apartment building, they probably have metal in them, then that Wi-Fi just won't go through it.
Yes, exactly. And the doors are metal at both ends.
Right.
So I decided to try the live wire power line AV kit. The one thing that they tell you over and over, and they are correct, each end of the kit has to be plugged directly into a wall socket. No extension cords, no universal power supplies, but you plug one unit into the place where your Wi-Fi is, and then you run a cable from your router to the back of that unit. The other unit goes wherever you want, in my case, in my back apartment. And into that, I plugged my Roku box, and then I plugged my flat screen TV into my Roku box. And now I have streaming video in my back apartment.
You know, this is great because we had a caller earlier who was on Wi-Fi, and I should have suggested this as a solution, but the truth is I don't have any experience with it. And in the past, Powerline networking has been pretty iffy. So it works well, he said.
It works well. And the difference of this, Belkin makes one where you just get one Wi-Fi line going to your back apartment. When you plug this in, you're actually plugging in a mini router. So my Roku box is plugged in back there, but I still have three empty USB hubs where I can plug other stuff in.
And what kind of, do you know what kind of speed? Have you done a speed test?
You know what? I have not done a speed test. My only speed test is I have watched 13 old Alfred Hitchcock TV episodes flawlessly.
No so buffering, no pauses. Stuff, all right.
No buffering, no nothing. I haven't done any high def movies, but for black and white, it's flawless.
How much?
And the list price is, I believe, $149. And if you do a search around, you can just get it at the $100 mark.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Go to gizwiz.biz. Yes, that's a web address. GIZWIZ.BIZ for Dick's website, where he has lots of gadgets and also a great contest that can win you an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. He calls it What the Heck Is It? And frankly, it's easier to win by making up an answer than by getting it right. So don't be threatened. Truthfully, it's not the people who get it right. It's people who come up with crazy, wacky answers that really
That's
win.
My life, crazy, wacky.
The crazy, wacky gizwiz at gizwiz.biz. So hang on the line, Nick. We'll do our gizwiz in just a bit, our daily podcast. We record those on Saturday afternoons. I'm going to do a little post-recording after the show, though. So if you're on the line, stay on the line. I think I can have one more call in here before I go, but I will get the rest of you. Everybody's on the line. I will get to you after the top of the hour. And in fact, we'll probably keep taking calls for another half hour or so. Time and Dick permitting. Dan in Reedsburg, Wisconsin. Hi, Dan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good day, sir. I've got a Mac Mini. It's about a little over 5 years old, and it's been getting slow, of course, because the huge 80 gig hard drive is about full. So I want to replace the hard drive with a bigger hard drive. After I do that, I want to start clean slate. How do I start the operating system back up? I have all the original disks.
You just do the same thing that you would do even if you weren't replacing the hard drive, which is, there's two ways to do it. One, stick the hard drive, the install disk in, double click the installer, and it'll reboot. The other is to reboot the machine with the CD and the drive and hold down the C key. On a Macintosh, if you're holding down the C key and there's a bootable disk in the CD drive, it will boot from it. And then make sure when you go to start to install the operating system, you choose options and say, I want to do a clean install. Thanks for the call, Dan. Thank you for being here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week.